Welcome to Limited Time Only.
I'm Esther.
And I'm Susie.
Limited Time Only is the podcast for anyone who feels there aren't enough hours in their life.
And each week, there's a different topic for you to get your ears around.
Featuring chat, comedy sketches, and interviews with interesting people.
Limited Time Only is a pick-me-up in podcast form.
The special guest later in the episode is Sarah Guanyoma. This week, it's time for Contemplating Grief.
Hello, Esther here. This episode is about contemplating our own mortality, so obviously we cover topics about grief and death. Whilst that sounds bleak, I can assure you this is a lovely episode full of joy, laughter, a touch of narcissism, and poignant moments too. So if this topic feels like it might be a bit too much for you today, then it may be best to tune out.
This chat was recorded at the end of 2023.
Suze, what are your thoughts about death?
Oh,
I'm going straight in.
Good morning to you.
Going straight in deep, existential questions. What do you think about death, Suze?
What do I think about it? Oh.
Are you on board with it?
I think I'm not a big fan. It is interesting, the attitude to death and how that's changed over the years from something that was just like, oh, yeah, that thing that kind of happens. Or, oh, that character in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That was kind of my idea of death. You know, the hood. Do you remember Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Vaguely, yes. I don't remember death.
It's death as in the figure of the black hooded figure with the scythe. But he was quite jolly.
Yes.
He was quite entertaining.
Yes.
And then I think about a year ago, I was really, not down with death as a concept. And I think that's where this podcast all sprang from, wasn't it, really?
I think once you hit 40, yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I have thought about death pretty much every day of my life and have been aware that I don't know that tomorrow is guaranteed. So I kind of... it actually makes me, I'm scared to death of it. But I'm also, it also makes me want to, come on guys, let's crack on, let's do stuff, because you don't know how long you've got. And so it actually makes me not waste my life, I think, as much as I could do. I still do, I still flounder and stuff and I don't always know the answers and that's just normal life. But I'm very conscious of it and always have been. And so... It's just something that's always been there, in like you're hurtling towards it in a way. That's what I've always felt like.
And that speed's increasing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what happens at 40, which is why we talked about this podcast and what haven't we done?
Yeah, and the idea, you suddenly become mortal at 40, I think, which is very weird. Before that, you're kind of immortal, aren't you? It just doesn't... Well, I think different for you, maybe. I just didn't really ever... It wasn't something I'd really thought about before.
Yeah.
But I did. I think about a year ago, I got a real kind of crisis of, oh, good Lord, I'm middle-aged and, halfway through. Oh, crumbs, right, need to crack on. And I think I do know more people who have passed away now. Mm. Previously, it has really been elderly relatives, which has been really horribly sad. And I'm still sad. That you know, my grandparents have gone, but that the idea of death coming when you're older, when you're younger, is distant and far off. But as you creep upon those higher figures, it just becomes a more real concept. Yeah, so I'm not in love with the idea of it, I have to be honest. But I'm trying to get my head around it and not dwell on it as much as I was maybe a year ago. I think it was really holding me back, ironically.
Yes, it can be quite paralysing, can't it, if you think about it too much, because it can make all of your decisions seem sort of more impactful and, you know, or if I go that way, but I've only got so many years, so what am I trying to fit in?
Yeah, but I think you are what you were saying before about, grasping the day, and I think you're such a positive person. And I do get that sense from you that you're kind of, look at this. it's life and there's things to do and it's fun. And I think I do have that a lot, but then I really go into the,
have a lot of that. You definitely do have a lot of that. And I had a lot of death in my childhood, a lot. And I think I was a bit like it beforehand. So I remember my parents taking me to see, there was a rerun. I didn't see this when it originally came out, just to be clear, of Sleeping Beauty or Cinderella or something in the 80s at the cinema. And I remember the book opening at the beginning, Once Upon a Time. And I remember turning to my mum and going, it's not nearly over, is it? Even though it's just been the trailers and that, because I was so desperate for it not to end. And I think that's what I feel with life. Gosh. And there were a lot of people that died in my childhood. First was my great grandmother. That's fine. She was in her 80s. You know, that's like fine, you say, that's natural. It's sad, but it's natural.
Thing. No, yes, absolutely.
And then my aunt died when I was 6 of blood poisoning. She died of sepsis. And then from 1990 to 1995, so many people in my life died. My mum died in a car crash that we were in together, and I nearly died. Then my mum's dad died 3 months later of cancer. He was only 66. Then my great grandmother died. Then my grandmother died, and both her brothers. Then a boy that was in my year at school, 16, was killed on his bike. And it was just like, it was just a lot. And with my grandmother, I found her as well when I was nearly 16, nearly 17. There was just a lot of people dying. And then my grandpa died, but that was after that 5-year window. But they were all before I was 20. So there were a lot of people. And it's probably a weird thing to say, but I sort of view it as a gift because I'm so aware of time going. And my father-in-law died last year. And I've noticed a change in my husband since my father-in-law died, that he's suddenly more like, okay, actually, it's over pretty quickly. And so I am somebody that will cry most days, but usually at things like, look at that rainbow. And I mean, it sounds so annoying.
You're so cute. You are so cute.
It sounds so annoying. But I'm like,
oh, Esther.
And actually, my auntie died at the beginning of this year. And oh my God, I loved that woman so much. Mm. She was like a mother figure. She was my mum's older sister. And she was only 73, which years ago was old, wasn't it? But now, it's pretty much Madonna. Like, Madonna's like not far off that. So, But what was different with her was I knew she was dying. We knew she was going. She had pancreatic cancer. And in that few months up until her death, when we knew she was on her way out, I felt so privileged to... I drank her up. I literally spent every... I saw her... She lives about an hour away from me, but I saw her every week or every couple of weeks. We spoke on the phone all the time. We said absolutely everything we wanted to say to each other. Aww. And it was such a privilege because everybody else sort of went bang. It was just a blink and they were gone of all ages. And so that felt like a real privilege to have that time to discuss everything, to laugh together, to be sad together, to cry together, to reminisce together. I feel that was very, very special. It was really helpful, actually, really helpful to grieve together, so that when she went, I was still very, very sad. But it was more complete than the shock of having the rug pulled out from underneath you when it's...
Right.
Because so many people just went like that. And now I'm older. I just expect people to die all the time. So I'm like, oh, they're probably just going to die. And then I'm surprised when they live and I think, oh, I just thought people just went really quickly.
What a nice surprise.
What a lovely surprise. They're still alive.
Woken up.
Yeah. And so I think it is a bit of a gift in a way.
Do you think you felt prepared for the parting?
Yeah, maybe. And it was nice to... I just knew that, oh, okay, we haven't got very long. I'm going to spend as much time with you without being annoying as is physically possible. As much as you want me there, I'm going to be there.
Yes.
And that was joyous, absolutely joyous and heartbreaking, but a real privilege, a real privilege.
Do you think that we possibly as a nation, but I think probably other nations are the same, we don't prepare for death and our our kind of concept of death. I mean, death is not discussed really, is it?
No.
As we, ever. And it's this, oh yeah, you know, nothing more certain than death and taxes. or nothing certain in life, but death and taxes. I don't know why they're northern.
Always northern. Everything's northern in my head.
Yeah. but if we were more prepared and more realistic about it, then maybe it wouldn't be such, I mean, obviously, yes, there are horrible shock deaths. I just think we don't maybe prepare ourselves mentally for it or prepare each other mentally for it. I'm just thinking, actually, the only time people do is possibly when people go, do you know, we're going to get a pet, probably a gerbil for Bobby and Betsy, because we just think it'd be really good for them to learn about death. And I'm like, why are you buying a pet to learn about death? I mean, that's really morbid and weird.
So it can die.
Yeah, we're buying a pet so it can die and the children can cry. And then they won't feel so bad when granny pops the clogs in about 20 years. Very strange. That's the only time people try and prepare their kids for death by killing their pets. They don't kill them, but they don't.
That would be quite extreme. But I know what you mean.
Maybe they do.
Let's just buy a rabbit and then it'll die and they'll get used to it.
I mean, that's weird.
It is an interesting concept, isn't it? I think I heard Ricky Gervais say once something about when you realise that there's nothing else, that's when you start living. And I think one thing I try and do is I try to be as present with everybody as I can be at the time. And I try to tell everybody how much I love them at the time so that I don't feel that there's anything left unsaid. You know, if the roof suddenly dropped in the house or whatever and I was gone, it would be done. It would be, you know, people would know and they would be very conscious how I feel. But I don't know if you've heard of a woman, incredible woman, called Chris Helenger, who runs this account called How to Glitter a Turd. She was diagnosed 14 years ago with stage 4 breast cancer, incurable, at 23 or 22, 23, I think. And she started the Copperfield charity. She has lived and she is living this incredible life. She's got this amazing charity. She does treks. She's raising so much money. And earlier this year, sorry, one second. I'm recording in my son's bedroom today because we're having work done on the house. And I thought I could hear people talking outside the bedroom and I was going to tell them to shut up. But in the loving way.
Of course,
I might not see them again. But earlier this year, she had something called a funeral. And she hired Truro Cathedral.
Yeah.
She got all of her friends and people that she loved there. Dawn French, dressed as the Vicar of Dibley, did the order of service. She basically had, there was dancing, there were people, she told everybody how much she loved them, and everybody got to say what they wanted to say to her, and it was a massive party. Wow. They had like a rave at one point. There was choirs, and I just thought, so often we tell everybody the nice stuff, or we say the nice stuff about people when they've gone.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in tell people how ace they are today. Tell people today. I think that's
I know people who've had living wake. It's a living wake, isn't it?
And yes.
That's becoming more. If you know, I mean, I quite like to have one, like soon. I haven't got a terminal illness. I'm not planning to.
But you are dying, Susie.
We're all dying every day, a little bit more. Sometimes on stage as well, or on this podcast. But I think that's a really lovely thing to do, and maybe we should all just aim for that, just to have a living, because my god, you know, you want to hear all the nice stuff.
Yeah, of course you do.
People just don't, and we're not effusive enough to say how wonderful we think people
are. I can be a bit much sometimes.
Well, you, other than you,
I'm sure there's others.
it's like the only time I've ever heard my dad say he's proud of me is at my wedding.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a big occasion.
Yes.
To get these kind of big emotions out. So maybe we should just arrange it. We should all have one.
Yes.
Gosh, we could make a fortune. We...
You're like Del Boy.
The drinks are on me.
We interrupt this programme with a you-bash. There is a saying that goes, one will sleep when one is dead. Well, that big sleep will come sooner than one would like it to, if one doesn't get more sleep. Good night. Goodbye.
Have you thought about your funeral? Do you know what you'd like?
Oh, yeah, I've written some notes, Esther.
Oh, brilliant. Tell me, so I've got it all written down for when you die.
I did a play years ago with my theatre company, Idiot Child, and we thought about funerals and planning our funerals, and some of this is stuff that I've been thinking about for at least 15 years, I think. Wow. So I'll just give you the rundown. You can take notes if you like.
On it.
So preferably, the funeral will take place at the Royal Albert Hall, which will be bedecked with enormous banners with my headshot on it. Also hung from national monuments.
Yes.
Stonehenge, Worcester Cathedral. I don't know why Worcester Cathedral came to my head. I'd like the whole of Mozart's Requiem played.
Right.
It's only about 40 minutes long.
Yep.
So that's not too bad.
Easy.
There'll be a lot of crying in that.
Yeah.
It's rather magnificent as well, so it'd be great. That'd be by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And then there'd have to be a 2-minute silence across the BBC.
Yes.
The Archer's theme tune would be played in a minor key, probably on bagpipes. That's quite a good idea, anyway,
that's
isn't it?
That's a really good idea.
So you've got the Mozart's Requiem, terribly sad funeral with lots of people getting up and making incredible eulogies about my life. But there'd also be a tribute concert that evening featuring my favourites, Steps, obviously.
Yeah.
Chesney Hawkes.
Yeah.
Friends of the show. Jason Donovan, the Backstreet Boys, Crowded House and Blur.
Yeah.
Not very many women in there.
No.
But maybe you could get up and do a bit on the ukulele or something.
That would be lovely. I'll start practicing now.
Yeah, the Royal Philharmonic would have to be there. Oh, and Bellowhead.
Yes.
They'd have to
And
do
Kevin Costner and Christian Slater.
Yeah, they could get up and do a dance. I'd like it to be quite dance. I'd like a lot of dancing and colours. Plus readings from the elite of the acting world. Yourself, obviously. I mean, that's probably it, isn't it, in terms of people I know. And then there would also be commemorative mugs for sale. Because then my family could get a little bit of money.
Yeah, they've got to keep your family going.
Yeah. So I think it'd be a mix of joyous and absolutely tragic. That's what I'd like. A kind of range of emotions going on.
Yeah.
People flinging themselves on the floor.
Yeah, sobbing. Italian or Greek women in black dresses.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
And the Backstreet Boys all crying while singing I Want It That Way.
As the coffin goes, will you be cremated or buried?
I think I'll be shot into the sky from a cannon. A bit like the enormous crocodile. And I explode on the surface of the sun, creating a rainbow effect in the sky. I'm not sure I've gone a bit far here, Esther.
I think it's actually not too dissimilar to mine, which I think might tell us that we're massive narcissists.
Tell me.
Because mine is very, very similar. I want everyone in colour.
Yeah.
If I know I'm going to completely choreograph the whole thing. I want people to make people laugh, and then we're going to hit them and make them cry. So it'll be a moment of laughter. Oh, gosh, she was so funny. She was so ace. Then bang, hit them with a sad song. I'm also going to, if I knew I was going, pre-record a bit.
Oh, yeah.
That then I pop up and that will be, shock everybody. And they'll be like, oh, my God, and there she is. And then they'll
Could
cry
you be a hologram?
And then they'll laugh. Oh, a hologram. Yeah, that's
like
a good
ABBA.
Idea. Yeah. I could do a dance routine.
Oh,
I could
my gosh.
Do you know what I'm good at? Beyonce's Crazy in Love. So maybe I could do a hologram. Dance routine to Crazy in Love, that beginning bit, I can nail it. And perhaps I should record that now so that they could bring it out, you know, if I die as an old lady,
if,
touch wood.
Yeah. Then while your knees are still there.
While my knees are still working. I'm very careful about what songs I'm going to choose because I don't want to ruin a song for someone because obviously if they heard it at my funeral, they'd never be able to listen to it again.
True.
Because it
would
be too
sobbing.
Devastating.
Yeah.
So you've got to go for something a bit, like, not too sad. I do want... This Is a Day by Captain Beefheart, which I just love. I don't know why. And people don't know that much. So that would be all right, which is a very beautiful song. And I want to be cremated. Mm-hmm. And then I want my ashes scattered off the beach at Whitstable, 3 beaches to the left of the Neptune when you look out to sea, and just next to the tennis courts. And I want to blow away. I don't want to be buried. I want a blue plaque somewhere.
Where?
Would like... Wherever I've been, the most brilliant. Maybe lots of blue plaques.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of blue plaques. I'd also like, I like the idea of a 2 minute silence, like globally.
Yeah. Oh, globally, yes. Oh, mine like, was just sort of local.
I'd like a, oh no, I want global. I want, and then perhaps like an extended BBC News special, but maybe across all the channels.
Who would present that?
Oh no, the first name that came into my head is
no,
not the
I
right
know.
Name to say.
Not the right one.
I don't know, somebody fabulous, because maybe the next name that came into my head was Michael Barrymore.
John Craven.
Bring him out as a hologram. Or Moira Stewart.
Get him to record that now.
Moira Stewart. Let's bring out, let's have a girl.
Yeah,
Or just somebody, you know, fabulous. Or maybe a cranky. Or if we're going holograms, Victoria Wood. Who I never knew, so I shouldn't call her Vicky because that's massively disrespectful.
But...
Miriam. Talking about Miriam Margolyes earlier.
Miriam Margolyes.
Miriam, yeah.
She'd be great.
Miriam
She'd have
would
the
be
right
amazing.
Mix of pathos and comedy.
She'd be brilliant and she'd swear, and I bloody love a good swear. But my son and I talk about it quite a lot, and I think I've got quite a dark sense of humour with death, and my son will often say to me, he'll come up with songs that he wants as the curtains close because he wants to be cremated, and he'll say, I want Highway to Hell and stuff like that.
Oh, amazing.
And songs that reference burning.
Yes,
but
so
I,
funny.
Basically, when people come to my funeral, I want them to laugh. I want them to cry. I want them to leave feeling joyful, but that there's a massive hole in their hearts that will never be mended. That's what I'm going for.
I think that's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's...
It's
yeah.
beautiful and egotistical and all the things I think of when I think of you.
Yeah.
Not really. Oh, well, you know what? We've got plans there. And I think we just need to start putting them in. I don't think we could actually record this podcast anymore because I'm going to be very busy planning your funeral for the next 50 years.
And I'm going to go and record my Beyonce hologram and start learning the ukulele.
Right. How much is a cannon?
I love a good podcast. And when I find one I really like, I tell everyone I know about it. I grab my phone and I share the podcast with everyone in my address book. And then I post about the podcast on social media. Then I rate and review the podcast. And then I have a warm feeling inside for the rest of the day. Just saying. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Limited Time Only. I know I am. Now, where's my phone?
Oh, sorry I'm late. I got carried away in the specials aisle at Aldi. I'm starving.
Oh, no worries. I just accidentally bought everything in Flying Tiger. Get anything good?
Well, I got a wetsuit for the cat.
Essential.
15 pairs of extra large gardening gloves.
Handy.
And a funeral.
Sorry, what?
A funeral.
I thought you said that. Have a croissant.
Oh, thanks. It was only £15.99 for the full shebang. CD of sad songs, coffin confetti, 8 travel packs of tissues, and a life-size cutout of the deceased celebrity of your choice. As long as they're in stock. Could have had Lionel Blair, Des O'Connor, Bruce Forsyth, etc. I went for Terry Wogan. Look.
Ah, I'd go for Terry too. What's he holding?
A chocolate orange.
Comforting. I'll pop down after this and get an Aldi funeral for myself.
Mm.
Might as well get organised. You know, you never know when you might... Claire... Are you all right? Oh, dear. I hope they've still got some funerals left. Terry's not yours. He's mine. I'll finish your croissant if you're done with it.
Really good. Really good. It's been a busy week. I've launched an online book club with the Hastings Bookshop. So we've got our first online author meet at the end of January. So, yeah, it's really, really exciting. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Today's guest is the total ray of light that is Sarah Guanyoma. You may know Sarah from her social media platform, What Sarah Read Next, where she reviews books, interviews authors, and generally brings a lot of joy to her community. The catalyst for this platform were some unimaginably painful life-changing events. In 2017, whilst living in Fiji with her husband and young son, Sarah, having just suffered a twin miscarriage, lost her brother and her husband, both unexpectedly, just months apart. Follow this up with a global pandemic, and this led Sarah to reevaluating her life and her work in international development. Now, back in the UK and living by the coast with her son, Sarah has created What Sarah Read Next, an inspiring community for book lovers. She is also working on her first book and has just launched her book club, What We Read Next. We talked to Sarah about her resilience and positivity, how she has taken care of herself and her son through these experiences, and the plans she has for her community. Welcome to the show, Sarah Guanyoma. Today's episode is about contemplating grief and how we deal with that. And how we move forward with that. And we wanted to talk to you a little bit about your experiences, as much or as little as you want to talk about, because we know that you've had a very, well, bloody tough few years.
I've taken a lot for the team, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So can you start with us, start by telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so in 2017, I lost my younger brother, James, around Easter time, actually. And I was in the middle of doing some IVF. We just started IVF with my late husband, Tim. I was living in Fiji. So I moved to Fiji back in 2008. So financial crisis is kicking off. I just met this beautiful Australian guy at a house party, my house party in Camden. And, you know, from the straight go, he was really honest and said that he'd basically just applied for a job with the UN to be based in Fiji. And I was like, that's great, fine, awesome, sounds great. I actually honestly didn't see us lasting past 24 hours because it's just fun. I just come out of a relationship, so I wasn't really looking for a relationship. But there you go. 3 months later, I'm boarding the plane to go and join my hot Aussie on the other side of the world. And so that's, we built up this life. We got married there. We had our son Isaiah there, who's now 10. And so fast forward to 2017, and I'd had, basically after having Zizi naturally, I'd wanted to have some more children. And when we started trying, I was having problems trying conceiving. I'd get pregnant, but I'd have early miscarriages, so like 6 weeks. The worst loss was our twin loss at 12 weeks. That was like 2016. So let's fast forward to 2017. And around Easter time, and my then husband Tim was away in Vanuatu with work, and I got a call in at about 3 a.m. just because of the time difference from my mum to say that my brother James had been found dead in his flat. And I don't know about you ladies or anyone listening, when you've had bad news, I just remember like it was dark because it was my room, it was 3 a.m. Dizzy was sleeping in my bed, and just the room started to spin, and it was like, what? Just things started spinning, and I just couldn't quite fathom what my mum was saying, and she was all hysterical, and I didn't really know what to say. I just remember kind of, your body just goes into shutdown mode, and all I could think of is like, I just want to be home. And like, the last time I'd spoken to my brother had maybe been like a month ago. Like, he wasn't very well, he hadn't been well for a while. And it wasn't, it wasn't suicide. It was just basically died of natural causes. But he was the baby brother, you know, and it's kind of like, as the older sister, you know, there's a lot of kind of like, what could I have done more to help him? Anyway, I was on the next plane out. Called Tim. Tim had to fly back from Vanuatu, tag team. So I'm on the next flight out to London to be with my family. That was pretty horrible. And it was my first sort of like experience with like real person grief, because I guess miscarriage grief is very different to like losing a loved one who you've known for like 27 years and has been your baby brother. You know, he might have been 27, but he's my baby brother and always would be my baby brother. And just seeing like the pain my mum was going through, like, you know, I'd lost babies, you know, who I hadn't birthed and sort of brought up, but whereby she's kind of birthed this child and seen up for 27 years, and to lose a child, I feel like is a completely different grief altogether, and it's not something I would never want to go through. So that happened, and then I, you know, went back to Fiji, and it's just so weird to kind of bury your brother and then go back to your up to this life on the other side of the world, and sort of kind of get on, and also kind of, you know, I remember thinking, how am I going to make myself feel better with this? And because we'd been going through IVF, I don't know, I felt really determined just to like, I need something. I need some like some happiness. And so I remember just like booking in for some more IVF. So basically, just cut long story short, we had 5 embryos. by the time James died, I think we were down to like two. So I, you know, I went over, did a round of IV, like, you know, used embryo, that didn't work. And then, so we're coming into Christmas mode, and Tim and I were decided, we were like, well, let's fly my mom over, like her first Christmas without James. It's her youngest born. Let's fly her over for Christmas, and we'll fly Tim's family over for Christmas too. We'll just have this really nice Christmas all together. I was like, yeah, let's definitely do that. And then I was like, well, you know what? Like, because IVF is such a cutthroat sort of process to go through. And I kind of felt like, well, we both felt as a couple, there's been a lot of grief this year. And, you know, in addition to my brother, we've all these, like, we keep doing this IVF rounds and nothing's working. Why don't we just basically call it whereby let's lose this last embryo. And we've just, you know, whatever happens, we just know that we've done a really good job, but we just don't want to carry on this. Let's keep going doing these rounds into like the new year. So booked mum to come over. Mum flew over from London. And I flew out to Melbourne to do this final IVF. I was coming out of a yoga class. I remember the sun was shining like it is today. And I was feeling really confident. You know, I'd actually said to the yoga instructor, I told her like, oh, I'm going in for my last IVF round. Is there any sort of special juju you can do? Or like, whatever. You send like the best blessings to my uterus so that this could work. She's like, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I come out of the class and I turn on my phone and there's all these missed calls from Fiji, from my friends. I'm like, oh, that's a bit odd. Anyway, I turn it on and I was like, they were like, call home, call home, call home. So I call my friend and she's like, where are you? I was like, oh, I was just coming out of the class. She's like, are you on your own? I was like, yeah. And then my phone battery started to die. I was like, listen, can I give you a call back? I was on my way for Christmas dinner with Tim's family, Tim's siblings, for example. Yeah, Tim's siblings. So I get in the car, drive back to Tim's Tim's parents' home. Because I was staying with Tim's parents. My battery's dying. So in my headspace, I was like, I need to just get back to their home. Charge my phone and find out what's going on back in Fiji. So that's what I did. So I was in the kitchen on my own, plugged my phone in, and I called my friend. I was like, well, what's going on? She's like, are you on your own? I was like, yes, tell me what's going on. She's like, it's Tim. He's had an accident. And I have to say, at that point, I didn't really feel like there was bad news on its way. I was just like, oh, it's Tim. He's strong. It's going to be fine. You know, there was no sort of like there was nothing in me that was like, there's going to be some imminent bad news. So then I was like, okay, well, where is he? She's like, was actually in the hospital. I was like, okay, we'll put him on the phone. Can I speak to him? She's like, Sarah, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but Tim's dead. And I was sort of like holding my phone and then like looking at my phone, like taking it off my ear and looking at the phone. And I was like, what the fuck did you just say? She's like, he's dead. And I was like, the room started spinning again. But I was like, no, he can't be dead. I said, like, just put him on the phone. So then I hung up the phone and I tried to call Tim because I'm like, well, he can't be dead. But then his phone's calling out. And then I tried to call my mum and I get mum on the phone and she's like, not speaking. She's like, Sarah, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, what are you all talking about? Like, he can't be dead. I was like, because James has died. I just, in my head, I was like, there's no way Tim could be dead because it's Tim and he's strong. And it's Christmas, and then Tim's dead, and then James is dead. I just couldn't really compute it. But there's something kind of clicks into your headspace where it's like, whatever news is being delivered to you, you're kind of going into shock mode. So I obviously started going to shock mode, because then I hung up, and I remember screaming really loudly and like kind of spinning, and then getting on my phone to call Tim's mum, who was on the way to book club with her girlfriend. So I call her, and I just remember like saying dead, and then I just remember brakes screeching, and then me hanging up. And then I just basically started WhatsApping friends, Tim is dead, Tim is dead. And then from then on, it's just basically pandemonium. And then I just don't remember thinking like, I need to get home to Zizzy. Like, where's Zizzy? And you know, it's just, I don't know if you've ever kind of been in a situation like mine, probably not, I hope not. But like, things just start to kind of motion. Like people start to arrive at the house, everyone's crying. I'm just still in shock. And I'm really angry at this point. I remember just shouting to Tim, but you can't be dead. It's really hard to kind of hear this news when you're not in the country, and it just feels really unbelievable, which is why I was like, I need to get home now to like A, see Zizzy, but like actually see that he's actually physically dead, you know? But yeah, and because he was working with the UN, just something happens when you're kind of working with those kind of organizations, things just start to work. It was kind of like, oh shit, Obama's arriving or something. Because that pretty much how it felt when we arrived back into Fiji. There was just like UN cars everywhere, like motorcades. And that's when I knew, oh, okay, I think this is pretty serious. And I think, yeah, he might actually be dead. And then I got back to our house and there was just all our friends and family and my mum. It was just inconsolable. And she's the one that ended up finding him, which is like the sickest part of all of this, I think. It was just like, oh, wow, we flew you over to get some respite. And like, you've gone and ended up finding your dead son-in-law. Wow. Yeah, so that's pretty much in a nutshell, like what went down in 2017. So I didn't end up using the embryo because obviously I had to fly back. And instead of like having Christmas, well, we kind of had a sort of a, how would you say, like a soft Christmas for the sake of Zivi and like his cousins and everyone. But yeah, we were basically like burying Tim or like cremating Tim like a week before Christmas.
Oh God, it's so much, isn't it? And it's the fact that, like you say, to lose your brother at such a young age in such a shocking way, it's like, that's horrendous. It feels like lightning shouldn't strike twice. And so then to lose Tim, and that he's strong, fit and healthy, and then he's gone.
Well, that's the thing, he was.
Of course, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up.
No, it's nonsensical. And like, you know, I mean, we're all headed in the same direction. Like, we're all going to, you know, we're born, we die. But it's like, when it's not in the kind of order that it should be, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, my mum just kept saying, why not me? I take me, not James and him. And you'd think that, wouldn't you? I mean, I've got Zizi and I would totally like take one for him. But like, none of it made sense, you know? And like, I've never seen a dead body before. So I think the next day, I think straight away. No, actually, no, we arrived late, so I couldn't go and see him. But the next day, I wanted to go and see him. And so did Zizi, actually. This is like, we were both like, we wanted to go and see him. But like, because some time had passed and just the way he sort of died, he had a heart attack in the shower and, you know, fell. And there was just, it was just not nice. But we wanted to go and see him. But our friends had seen him and identified his body. They were like, oh, I don't think it's really a good idea. Especially for Zizi, he'll have nightmares. But you know what? It's so funny how these things work out, because when James died, I remember reading Julia Samuel's book, Grief Works, that was it. And also listening to an interview by Brendan Cox, who'd lost his wife, the then wife, Jo Cox, who was the Labour MP. Yeah, because that was it. He'd written this book. Brendan Cox had written his book, Jo Cox. And in it, he describes how he'd taken his two children to go and see Joe's body. And they'd had like this whole ceremony around it, and how actually it was really good because on the advice of Julia Samuel. And I'd read this book like months before, and then I'm suddenly in a situation where I'm like, oh fuck, I'm now in that situation like Brendan Cox. And so I basically did everything he did with the children. His book, Jo Cox, became my like literal Bible. And I've since sort of listened to a really good chat he had with Julia Samuel on her Therapy Works podcast, which is really good. I really recommend that to anyone sort of grieving. It's a really great one. So what it is Julia Samuel interviews someone, and at the end, it's Julia Samuel and her daughters basically like analyze the talk. So without the person that she's interviewed, it's really good. So Brendan Cox chatting to Julia Samuel and relives that night and what the process of kind of grieving, but also, you know, looking after these children who are grieving their mum and how you kind of move on from that. So go to see Tim's body. I went in first because I had never seen a body before. So I didn't know how I was going to react. I didn't want to shock Zizi by my reaction. Obviously, you see me crying and everything, but I think there's something different about seeing a dead body and your child doing that. And if I'm freaking out, he's going to freak out. The poor kid's like 3 and a half. So I went in first. And, you know, ladies, it was like, it wasn't Tim. I just remember thinking, oh, that's not you. You're really gone. Like, it's a vessel. That's what you kind of think. It's like, there's nothing. He wasn't there. He totally wasn't there. And they did a really bad job with the embalming in Fiji.
Oh,
he literally looked like something out of a horror movie. Luckily, when he got to Melbourne, he was looking a lot better. But I went in first, and then I went and picked up Zizi from the car. And I walked him, and I remember, like, there was the window looking into where Tim's body was lying. And so I sort of said, Disney, so this is what's going to happen. We're going to walk in. There's Dada, and he's in his forever bed, and we're going to walk around. And you just got to remember that Dada, if you're trying to talk to Dada, he can't hear you in this space. But you remember, like I was saying to you, that now we might not be able to see Dada, but he can hear us where he is with Uncle James. And so he kept saying that. And so we just went round, we just did a loop, and you could see, like, in his little mind, there was so much going on in his head. And he remembers him saying, but Mama, like, if Dada's dead, why his eyes kind of open? Because they were, it was pretty gross. And I was like, oh, well, you know, and I basically just told him the truth. I said, well, you know, they weren't able to shut it properly. And then we did that, and bless him, like, we got back into the car, and I just feel like there was so much going on in his head. He just basically passed out, basically cold, sleepy, too tired. It's just like, this is a lot.
What an amazing mother you are, because to be coping with all of your own grief, and to, you know, and having to consider what's best for Zizi. I know that's natural instinct, but also I lost my mum when I was 11. We were in a car crash together. And so I understand, probably, well, from Zizi's perspective, really, because my dad was very, he sat down with me and was very sort of black and white. It wasn't, she's a star now or anything like that. It was like, sometimes people go to sleep and you just can't wake them up. And it was, you know, and I didn't see her body, but I did see other, I had a lot of death in my childhood, so I'm saw so a lot of those bodies, but I didn't see my mum, but because my dad said she wasn't fit enough for me to see her, really. So to sort of think about that from your perspective and what you did for Zizi, I mean, how is Zizi now?
He's good.
How is he? Because it definitely, I heard Jerry Halliwell say this, and it really it resonated with me a lot.
Yeah.
You get a death energy because you're aware this could go in a heartbeat. So you kind of relish everything. You can hold on to people and have these deep conversations. Yeah. It's like, let's just do the good stuff quick.
Absolutely. And again, going back to what Brendan Cox was saying with Julia Samuel, how, like, his purpose, because she's like, how do you do this? How do you, he's like, it's for the kids. You just want to ensure that this really shit thing's happened, but we're going to live. We have chosen to live the best possible life that we can. And also I say to Zizi, you know what, like, you've been dealt a pretty crap card, but that's also, you need to use that as a superpower, right? Because, like, we're all going to die at some point. And it's unfortunate that you've lost Papa so early. But you know what? Like, you're going to have friends that are going to go through this. Like, they're going to lose parents. There's going to be grief. There's always going to be grief. But you're going to be the superhero that is going to be there to save them, because you can say, you know what? I lost my Papa. And this is how I go through it. And, you know, like, I was always really open with Zizi from the get-go. I never did the whole, your dad's now a star, he's turned into a moon. I did things like, you know, he's dead, but I truly believe that there's another space that people go to, like where Uncle James is. And I believe big time in signs, like Tim sends us signs like all the time. It's really quite a magical thing once you tune in and you know and you can see. And like the day before his funeral, for example, we were in Airbnb in Melbourne, because Tim is from Melbourne originally. So that's where he was cremated. And we were in this Airbnb, which shut the windows the night before, so it's all airtight. But Zizi woke up from a nightmare, because he was like, but Dada was in my dream, I don't understand, where's Dada? I was like, okay, Dada's come to your dream because he just wants to make sure that, you know that he's okay. But I guess because you're so young, he doesn't quite, it's kind of freaky. So I remember saying to Tim, that's not the way, honey. That's not going to work. He's not going to get it. So just find a different way of just kind of letting us know you're there. But then I remember getting out of the bed after comforting Zizi, and there's this huge native bird feather, like, literally beside my bed that was not there the night before. And the windows are all shut. So how the hell did this feather get in there? It gets even better. Tim had this beautiful song he loved called Float On by Modest Mouse. It was a song that he played to me a lot when we first met, and since then, like, since we're all together. And after his funeral, we went on like a bar crawl, because Tim liked to drink. Like, I'm making that sound like an alcoholic. He just liked to have a bit of a party. So we went bar crawling all along Lygon Street in Melbourne. Anyone listening from Melbourne to this will just know the street I'm talking about. We just bar crawled. But literally, like, first bar we went into, Float On by Modest Mouse was playing. I remember thinking, that's so nice, wow. And I remember saying to the barman, like, oh, wow, did my late husband, it's you know, it's a funeral. Like, did you know him? because this is his favorite song. He's like, no, we're just a good song. Okay, cool. Then the next bar, we're just like ordering drinks, and then it comes on again. So then I'm like,
wow, that is amazing.
What is going on? Okay, so then the third time it happens, I'm like, this is no coincidence. This is Tim is a DJ for his own wake, basically.
Yeah. It's like, don't leave me out, guys.
Yeah, like, hello.
Have some good music.
Yeah, have some good music on repeat. I'm just going to have the same song on loop. I remember at that point, I was like, come on, and then again? And then I went to the toilet, and the lights start flickering. I'm like, no, that's too creepy. I don't like that. Stop doing that. That's not okay. And like things like feathers are a thing. Like I remember Dizzy's first sports day here in England, because we moved back from Fiji 2 years ago. His first sports day in his new school here in Hastings. And I'm sitting there and I'm feeling kind of melancholic because, yeah, I'm like, wow, Tim, you know, like you would love this. The sun's shining. It's, you know, Zizi's just run out with his new class. And I'm sitting there and I'm having a moment, and literally out of nowhere, this feather just dropped and landed in my lap. And I'm like, oh my God. Wow. Tim, you're here. Of course you're here, but like, wow, you really are here.
That's so lovely.
Yeah, and he used to come in my dreams a lot. I feel him a lot in the ocean, and so does Zizi. But there's just something really magical about knowing that your loved ones aren't, they're not completely gone. And if you tune into it and you believe in it, it's really something really beautiful and special about that.
I totally, totally agree with that. And you saying that reminded me, when my grandpa died, I was about 20, 21. I was very close to him. And my gran had died when I was 16. I was very close to her. Aww. But then I don't dream about my mum or my gran. But the night before my grandpa died, he wasn't ill. He was 79. He wasn't ill or anything. And he was in pretty good health. Yeah. I dreamt about my mum and my gran. Wow. And they both were in my dreams, and they were hugging me, and I could hear them both very clearly, and they were saying, it's going to be okay, you're going to be okay. And I woke up and I thought, what the hell was that about? I never dream about, particularly my mum, I don't remember her voice or anything, and she was there, it was very clear. And then that day when I was driving back up from London, and I didn't have my mobile switched on, because it was that time when you didn't have your mobile on or whatever. And I got back and it was like, your grandpa's in hospital. And I got there and he'd hung on all day, and he died about 20 minutes after I got there. I went and stood to see him. But I just think, and I'm totally with you. I see things all the time. And you just get these little signs. And I think that's, I mean, I don't know that song by Modest Mouse. Maybe I do and I just haven't heard of it.
Float On, you should play it. Yeah, it's really cool. I'm just going back to like how Zizi is, because that's quite an important thing, and I think it's good to like kind of mention it. Zizi's great, and he'll be fine with me talking about this. He had a little bit of therapy after Tim passed, so he was 3 and a half. And remember, grief changes as they grow, as we all grow. And it's almost like as he grows, he'll be needing therapy for the rest of his life. It's just a, you know, like an MOT. And one of the reasons why we moved, people ask, like, why did you move back from Fiji? Like, it's like, well, you know, like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I miss my family, also education, but also just getting the resources for Zizi, you know, in terms of like the support. We wouldn't have been able to kind of get the support I feel he needed in terms of grief. Not that there've been any sort of like worrying incidences, but it's just, again, me looking out for him. So he has started art therapy, which is specifically for grief, for his age. So he has one-on-one like every week. And so far, so good. So I sit next door. Obviously, I'm not allowed to know what's going on in those sessions, but I can hear giggling and laughing, which is wonderful to hear. Because, you know, over the 8 weeks, what happens is 8 sessions, he'll be building a memory book, and it's not necessarily he has to bring things about him. It's literally like they are asking Zizi to go through his memory bank about his father, which I think was lovely. And initially I was like, oh my God, they're going to rip this band-aid off and it's going to be really raw. But like, I tell you, like the last few sessions, he basically like jumped out of this skipping, and he's like, oh my God, mommy, and this, and I'm like, wow.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So he's going to be okay. I've always been really open and frank with him about what's happened. We cry together when he feels sad. We're just really open, like, you know, we're obviously mother and son, but he's also like a really good friend of mine. We're like best buddies, do you know what I mean? And we're always going to be able to kind of look out for each other, because we've gone through possibly the worst thing that could possibly happen to us. well, obviously me, but I'm going to go in time, you know. We are a team. We really are a team, and we really look out for each other. And I said to his school, like, you know, they're so strict here and so kind of like, you know, they're obsessed with like all this attendance bollocks. I say to them, I said to the school before, like, you know, you talk about kids needing like a doctor's script if they've got the flu. What about children who actually have lost parents and like are just, they get up in the, from the morning, they may have had a bad dream, or they might just be missing their mum or their dad or whoever. And they just simply don't want to go to school. Like, what do we adults do? We don't, we might, if we're having a sad day, is what I call them, we just want to basically lie still and cry it out and sleep, because grief is tiring, as we know. And that's what kids need to do too. So I've had a few times where I've said to the school, he's not coming in because he's we're having a sad day where we're just going to like lie very still, watch some movies, might be some crying, there might be some cuddling, but that's just what we're going to do. And if you're going to knock a few attendance percentages off us, so be it. I don't care.
I totally agree. And how brilliant, particularly for a young male, that he can be, you know, you've got this open emotional conversation that's happening all the time, that he feels safe. He feels safe to say, I'm sad today. Yeah. And actually, blocking it up and not letting it out does not make it go away. It will come out later. It will come out through illness. You'll have a nervous breakdown, whatever. It comes out at a later date. And it's, and I think it's brilliant, the relationship you've got with Dizzy. Sounds amazing. And how fantastic for him to have you as such a brilliant mum, who is so open, so communicative, so, you know, and allows him to process as he needs to, and that you've got each other's back, you know, to know you've got that unconditional love. And And it is really important that kids can have this time to think and breathe. We're not robots.
We're not. And, you know, we have this joke. We have this inside joke now where we, like, every time we put on a Disney movie, we're like, right, who's going to die first, mum or dad?
Well, don't you find that? Because I often think, like, oh, like, it kind of makes you think, well, oh, my mum died when I was a child, so therefore I must be the hero of this film.
Yeah, I know.
When my daughter, right, so I've got a 9-year-old daughter and a 5-year-old five-year-old son.
Okay, what is Zizzy's age?
Yes. So Beatrice loves writing stories. She'd love to talk to you about books and things, but she writes stories. But I find that most of her stories involve, there's always, the character's always an orphan, or there's a parent has died, which, so that kind of, that idea of trying, getting your head around that, and Zizzy's actually experienced that and had the resilience of coping with that. But I always go, why is there always a parent died in the story? But I suppose it's because it is the worst possible thing that could happen to a child.
It's your biggest fear, isn't it? And as a child, that's your greatest fear. I don't want anything to happen to my mum or my dad. And so so it's almost like from,
well, even as an adult, to be honest.
Yes.
I mean, I luckily haven't, you know, neither of my parents have passed away yet. And I was thinking about it this morning because I knew we were talking to you, but I was like, oh gosh, my mum had said to me before, gosh, you know, you're going to have to really prepare yourself. Because I was like, okay, because she knows that I'm going to be an absolute mess. But yes, for him, that he must be such a resilient boy. And you, I just wondered have you always been resilient, or do you, because strength comes out of nowhere sometimes, but you're clearly, you know, you've got a strength, an inner strength that's very powerful.
Do you know, it's funny, I caught up with an old school friend of mine. I went to boarding school, which I loved. I know, seen each other since school, basically. And we were like reliving school days. And she's like, Sarah, you know, I always look to you as like the mother figure. You know, you just always, I was tall as well. I think that kind of helped. And I always just felt like the girls, we had like a kind of a girl crew, like I think it was 5 of us, but I always felt very protective of them for some reason. And I guess because of my height and just maybe like my nature, I just always felt like I wanted to mother them.
The connection went a bit dodgy here, but Sarah talked about her mum, a strong woman who has dealt with tough things in her life.
That's probably where I get from. And I, you know, what I've gone through with, like, the, you know, countless miscarriages and baby loss, James, then Tim. I mean, I would say in terms of kind of warrior grief style, but I, But I'm a changed person. Like the person I was in 2017 is I'm profoundly changed by the experiences. And while it was really a shocking way to kind of really grow up and experience things, I feel like I really love the new me. Do you know what I mean? I feel like while it's really crap what happened, I've sort of morphed into this person who I really, really love, you know? And I feel like I can't say for sure that, you know, the next bad thing that might come my way, please God, not anytime soon. But I feel I'll be okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember when COVID kicked off. It was bad, I know, but I was like, we can do this. I remember it was Dizzy and I, everyone else, like, you know, Ireland, Fiji locked down, which mentally for me was a bit of a head fuck, just because it was like, you know, will I see family and friends again? We're locked on this island. I don't know, like mentally that just seems really a bit too much. But for 2 years, it was just Zizzy and I. But we just got into a little kind of got on with it. I just remember thinking like, I know this might be really bad for a lot of people, but I feel like we're going to be really okay. And actually we were. And I'd started doing my What's Sarah Red Next Instagram interviews, the What's Sarah Red Next sort of like book reviewings and things like that. So yeah, we're fine. But yeah, I've come out a lot stronger, a lot stronger. Yeah.
And so What's Sarah Red Next, tell us about that. So why did you start the platform? Because if anybody doesn't follow it, What Sarah Red Next is your platform on Instagram, and I started following it 2 or 3 years ago. It's very joyful. It's very positive. It's a real sort of bit of sunshine in your day.
Aww.
There's a warmth that comes across from everything that you post. Even when you're reposting videos, I'm like, oh, this resonates. This is fun. Yeah. This is uplifting. This made me laugh. And I think there's a lot of positivity that comes from your page. But tell us about it. What prompted it?
Yeah, well, what prompted it was grief. Like, James and Tim had died, and like my immediate world was so sad and fucked. And I was like, right, I'm just gonna go back into reading books. Well, I mean, I've always read, and I was part of a book club that time. But I just basically started reading a lot. Like, I wasn't sleeping, obviously, because I just couldn't sleep. So I just started reading books, like, a lot. I'd always been a big reader, but I really started reading ferociously. And I started blogging. I think Instagram had maybe just started kicking off. I started blogging about the books that I was reading. And then people were actually, like, commenting and reacting to what I was writing. So I just started doing it more and more. Then, obviously, lockdown kicked off. And I was working for the Australian government, managing a health program. And I don't know, I guess a lot of this happened to a lot of people during COVID. It was suddenly like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And I basically quit my job, what I did. And then obviously we've got all this time on our hands. And so I basically just started focusing a lot on my What's Sarah Red Next blog page. And then I started reaching out to authors whose books I was reading. And one of them being Douglas Stewart. I just read Shuggy Bane. And I like DM'd him because you can do that so easily. Well, maybe I can just do it. I don't know.
But, it's on your vision board.
It's on my vision board. And he'd just been shortlisted for Booker Prize. But I DM'd him. I was like, hi, I'm Sarah from What's Sarah Red Next. I just read your book and I loved it. I'd like to interview my platform. I think he voice noted me. That's why, you know, but excuse anyone listening to this who's Scottish. Excuse my Scottish acting, my pronunciation. He's like, Sarah, I'm up for the Booker. And I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, it's going to go crazy if I win. I was like, well, Doug, you're so going to win. That's why I'm to kind of lock you in. It's great because he still was like making time for me to interview him. But, you know, his mum died. He lost his mum when he was quite young. So we had this amazing interview chat where, you know, he was talking about how his mum was basically like such an inspiration and how much he loved her. And I ended up wailing. We both got really emotional because you can. We just suddenly sort of bonded over grief. And I have this thing where I best like, and it's not intentional. I guess it's like, choose the book because I want to read it. And it's an interesting book. I'll read it and I'll review it and I'll post about it. But for some reason, grief tends to be this theme that kind of carries through with a lot of the books that I've read that I'm reading. Going back to the fact that we're all going to grieve at some point, right? And so it's a theme, or it's something that we can all talk about, something we can relate
to. The thread of grief and how that connects. Well, it connects the entire world, I suppose, but it's the levels of grief and the experience. Yeah. But I think having that spiritual sense of we are connected still.
We are. In the West, we're not very good at talking about it. I've got my Irish friends. The Irish are really good at sort of like, they know the body's laid out in the pub, out there openly. The body is with you. like ovaries, there's women that you have to pay to wail really loud. Mm. You know, there's an open celebration of your loved one. Whereas, you know, I've got friends who lost parents and the next day, you know, were shipped off to boarding school and their parents were never spoken to again. And did they turn out all right? Well, I mean, they're fine now, but it's been taking a lot of work, a lot of therapy and sadness, really grief. Like you were saying before, Esther, you don't tackle it now. Wow, it's going to come and bite you up the arse at some point. So you'd rather tackle it now. I'm starting therapy again later this year for grief. We'll just have a full-on MOT. You know, my grief has changed. While Jizzy's having his checkups, I should also have my checkups.
Oh, I totally agree. I call it my MOT as well. I go, or maintenance or MOT, I go once a year for two or three sessions, just for a bit of MOT.
Maintenance, yeah.
So going back to what Sarah read next, you find that there's this grief theme that's going through. So, and you're actually writing a book yourself now, aren't you?
I am. I'm in the process of getting the book proposal together. Writing a book is a lot of work. Oh my God. there's a lot to go. And, you know, you can't just, I find that the mood you're in, you know, you can kind of be in flow and then suddenly not be in flow. So I've written half of the manuscript, which then will have to be edited and, like, you know, the book proposal goes and then, you know, then there's a bid for someone, anyone who will sort of take it and bid and then you're sort of kind of given an advance, well, hopefully, and then you got to go off and write the book. So 2000, I'm gonna say it now, and that way I'm committed, fully committed to it. 2024 is when I'll get the book proposal in, and then I'll be able to sort of kind of carry on and kind of writing it. But it's quite a process. But I'm joining a writing group, like a sort of a virtual writing group. So then that's committing me even more so. And what else has been going on? Oh, I'm doing Dry Jan, which might kind of extend. There's all these little things that I've started to do that I feel like is really going to help me on the way. So I've started Dry Jan, and that might kind of extend a bit longer. And I started cold water swimming here in Hastings. So I feel like there's lots of positive steps that I'm doing that are kind of pushing me in the right direction. And I feel like, you know, I've been not sitting on the book proposal, but I feel now more than ever is the time to really get the book out there. I feel like the way the world is, you know, whether you've lost a loved one or not, I feel like we've all collectively been grieving since COVID. There's been a lot of grief. There's just, like, you know, look in the news, there's just constant Gaza, like what's going on over there. It's just horrendous. And so, and we're looking at this in real time on our phones. And just, I feel like my book will be something that I hope will help. What's it about? It's basically based on what I've gone through. There's a lot of what I've gone through in the book, but that's as much as I guess I can say for now. It's not a memoir, it'll be fiction. And I really hope that anyone reading it will take a lot from it. There'll be stuff that obviously I've gone through, but I feel like weaving through some, like, nice or kind of takeaway messages about grief and about kind of coping with grief when sort of looking at the central character. That's something to look forward to.
You've got a book club, so you've got the platform on Instagram, but you've also got a book club that we can join.
Yes, please. Yes, it's What Sarah Read Next. No, it's not. Come on, Sarah. It's What We Read Next. It's What We Read Next. So I basically teamed up with the Hastings Bookshop and we launched last month. And so far, so good. So we've got a whole lineup of amazing authors for the whole of this year, which is fantastic. We're so excited. And we're already looking at authors for next year already, which is fantastic. So what happens is you sign up, you join an awesome book club where I pick a book. So this month's book is Hello Beautiful by Anne Napolitano. At the end of the month, we're going to be sitting down with Anne via Zoom and talking to her about her book, which will be really exciting. We'll send out three newsletters, which go out to our members. And we've also got a chat room within that's built into the website, whereby, so like where I've blogged, we can all kind of comment. So I'd say, like, it's like a Substack, but exclusively for our members. Yeah, so it's been great. We've had a really great response. We've had loads of press, and all our authors that we've got are great. But I cannot wait to announce the next batch of authors. I really feel like I would love to be a fly on the wall when we sort of announce our April, May, June authors. Because that's going to be incredible. I mean, we've got, like, an incredible lineup to begin with. But I said to Charlie from the beginning, both Charlie and I, Charlie who runs the Hastings Bookshop, I was like, we want to make sure that we're, like, the best bookshop on the planet. But also, we want to encourage reading. We want You know, we want people to join up knowing that they're going to get quality book reading experience. And at the end of the month, not only do they read the book, but we're going to be able to sit down with the author. And I just feel like that's, how cool is that? How cool is that?
That is a really fantastic idea. Yeah, amazing. Really fantastic. And I love that it's affiliated with a bookshop. Yeah. Tell us about Hastings and Hastings Bookshop. I'm quite obsessed with Hastings.
Susie wants to move to Hastings.
My in-laws spend a lot of time in Winchelsea. And we spend a lot of time in Rye.
Oh, I'm walking there tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah.
And Hastings, love it.
It's a belated walk I'm doing tomorrow with some of my girlfriends from Rye to Winchelsea, the Rye-Winchelsea circuit.
I've done that.
Yeah, tomorrow morning after school
drop-off. Oh, gorgeous.
So what's to say? It's just amazing. I love it. I love it so much. What I love is that obviously we're by the ocean, so you can see the sea from my window. There's lots of green space. It's a really vibrant, awesome community. Charlie bought the Hastings Bookshop just before lockdown, actually. So it was kind of scary time to do it, because obviously they didn't know, you know, lockdown was going to kick off. But what he ended up doing was, you know, because he's such a great entrepreneur, like, he was like, well, we're going to keep going. So he was basically doing hand deliveries of books to people around Hastings and St. Leonard's. I'm actually in St. Leonard's. I'm not in Hastings, but yeah, what's to say? Like, it's great. It's great communities. Lots of independent shops. You've got the pier. There's so much to do all the time. Half the time, I don't know what's going on. You kind of got to be in the know. But it's great because, you know, everyone has moved here for the same reason. They just want a better quality of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, I wasn't born in London, but I grew up in London. You know, 2 hours, I'm back in Capital Junction. I can see, like, friends and family. But I have to say, nothing pleases me more than jumping back on that train. And as soon as, I guess, we get past Gatwick and you start seeing the cows and the sheep, yeah, there's this really nice tingly feeling. You're like, oh, I'm heading home.
Do you sea swim?
I do. So I started last week. It was something that, like, one of my friends, Will, who set up the Goat Lodge, which is a really good fish and chippy here on the beach.
Oh, I've been there.
Have you? Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's so good, isn't it?
We were there not long ago and yeah, we loved it there. They were offering my husband a job because he was like, look, I'll pick up the glasses for you. And I was like, yeah, get a job here, we'll just move down.
Yes. Well, next time you're here, you should definitely, like, you know, let me know.
I'd love to, yeah.
So Will was like, because I used to work with Will in London, he was on, was like, Sarah, come on, you've got to come swimming. I was like, in the cold, are you crazy? But it's what everyone's doing right now. It's not that, like, I'm jumping onto every fad. But I was like, okay, we'll try it out. But I was like, I haven't got the equipment, because you need the hard, like, you know, this time of year, the gloves and the socks and the dry rib. You know, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly. Well, anyway, I put a call out, and within 5 minutes, someone's giving me a dry rib, someone's giving me gloves. I was like, well, I guess the universe is like, I'm going to do this. So yeah, I've done it now like 3 times and I'm hooked. I'm absolutely hooked. I've not been able to go out today because we're doing this. And like, just, there's just a busy time. Tomorrow I'm in Rye doing the walk. But Saturday, yeah, you know that. And obviously, because I'm not drinking, it's like, I've got to fill my time and I've got to have a new fix, haven't I?
And it is a fix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the dopamine fix is amazing. And I'm only in like a minute, ladies, max.
Yeah, well, that's sensible.
But every time you come out, you're buzzing for like 2 hours. Yeah.
It's like champagne fizzing through your body, isn't it? Something fizzing through your body that feels glorious for quite a few hours afterwards.
Don't inject champagne, people. Don't do that. It's not advised.
No.
Just go swimming.
No, just swim in the sea. But I love it. I completely relate. I love sea swimming. Yeah. I love getting in the water. It's definitely a happy place.
Me too.
My mission is to get Esther to move down to Hastings with me.
Yes.
And we'll live next door to you.
Yes.
And we'll just make loads of podcasts and go sea swimming every day and read those books. It's going to be great.
Yes. When? See, now you've said it. You've committed yourself to it.
I've signed up. On Rightmove, we signed up to an estate agency last time. We were in St. Leonard's. Everyone I met in St. Leonard's was absolutely delightful. It was like, what is this place?
Yeah.
It's everyone's so nice.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Yes. I'm walking up Norman Road. I'm like, I'm sure that's Susie.
Hi.
I call St. Leonard's Slens. That's my nickname for it. Slens. St. Leonard's Slens.
I like that.
Yeah, welcome to Slens.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Aww. Well, you're tempting me severely, so you never know.
Yeah.
We're going to have to let you go, get back to your busy life and book clubs and writing and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's been so joyful to speak to you.
Really nice meeting you too.
I'm so delighted that I manifested it.
Yes, you did.
With my vision board.
I love that.
So grateful that you've come on to talk to us. Thank you for sharing such a deeply personal story.
and being open to that. Ooh. And we really appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
Wish you every success with the book. Can't wait to read it.
Yes.
Can't wait to hear more about the book club.
Yes.
Amazing. This is going to be quite the year for you, isn't it? So, amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Goosebumps. I think it's going to be a pretty big year.
Yeah, really good. Really good. Well done. And, we think you're fantastic. So, we're excited for you.
Come hang out at St. Leonard's. Come hang out at St. Leonard's.
We will, definitely.
Yeah, we'll go see something.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Big love. Thank you. Do you know what? I might actually go for a swim.
Do it!
I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous.
Me too. Yeah. I want to go in the sea.
Do it for us.
I'm just like, oh, do you know what? I'm looking at the time. I could do that email. Nah, I'm going to go for a swim.
Oh, well done.
Do it. Yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
Feel that fizz.
Take care. Lots of love. Bye.
Lots of love. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Oh, what a delight. She's just incredibly lovely and brilliant.
You have been listening to Limited Time Only.
What an absolutely incredible guest Sarah was. I love talking. She's full of so much positivity and just what a story, what a life she's lived.
I feel so energised after speaking to her.
Yes.
And I hope you all felt the same listening to that as well. Thank you to all our patrons. We've had a few new people signing up this week. That's been lovely. And of course, thank you to you all for listening and putting up with us. No, it's just such a pleasure to make this podcast for you and with you. And we hope you're enjoying it as much as we are.
Yes, thank you. And if you do enjoy it, please don't forget to like and subscribe and tell your friends about us, because it really, really does make a massive difference. Have a lovely day. Have a lovely rest of your day. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Have a lovely rest of your life.
Have a lovely rest of your life. Yes.